Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Comic Book Club. Please put your hands together for Justin, Alex, and Pete.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I am Pete.
And that's our man of the booth, Ronnie Rotten.
Ronnie Rotten in
the booth. Rotten Ronnie. Which one is it? Is it Ronnie Rotten or Rotten Ronnie?
Ronnie Rotten.
There we go. He got named that by a video game company, is what I hear.
That's the best way to be named.
Well, you were named by a video game company, too, right?
Yep, they call me Justin 8-Bit Tyler.
Hey,
I'm old. Good.
Welcome back.
I've been away for a while. Thank you, sir,
and
everyone else, I'm sure. I had a baby. My wife had a baby, but I was sort of around.
Okay.
And I'm not. I'm here now, so I gave
up. Yeah, this
is
your first live Comic Book Club back. Yeah. How does it feel? How does it compare to dealing with a baby at home?
Being here?
Yeah.
It's like dealing with two babies.
Oh.
My good friends, thanks. Alex and Pete.
By the way, I need to be changed.
I know. Here's the thing. I just changed him. Backstage, and he's changed already.
That's the thing about Pete's, is they need one of three things, right? They're hungry, they need changing, or they're just sleepy.
Yeah, exactly. So tired. Punisher, his first word. Having two children is exponentially harder than having one. I learned.
Don't have to tell
recently.
This guy.
Yeah, you have two.
I do.
And then Pete has zero, so we're thinking of sort of evening out.
To be fair, Pete has two seasons of Iron Fist he has to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. Which requires a lot more attention than a child.
Guys, I'm very excited about the guest that we have on the show tonight. He is the writer of Justice League Dark and Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. Ladies and gentlemen, James Tynan!
Welcome to the show.
Hello. Please come sit down.
Have a seat. Have a microphone. Welcome to the show, sir.
Glad to have you. So glad to have you back, right?
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Great. It has been. Now that I'm back living in New York City, it's much easier for me to come in.
We appreciate you putting your career on hold since the last time you were on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Haven't done any titles in the interview.
Way to slow it down.
We'll get to the DC stuff in a second, but how many titles overall are you writing right now?
Oh, boy, that is a tough question. Especially right the last few months I've been working on top of, I'm doing work on Justice League with Scott Snyder as a part of his run. I'm doing work on Justice League Dark. And then on top of those two books, I've been doing two events, the Witching Hour, which is coming out in October, and Drowned Earth, which is coming out in November. And both of those events are I've been writing a lot this summer. So even though technically right now I'm just on... I am just on two books, but I've been writing the equivalent of two scripts a week for a while. And that's too many, you guys.
Yeah. I feel like you shouldn't know the number that you're working on because it might turn your hair all white.
Yeah. Well, but at the same time, the Justice League line, since it relaunched, there's been a lot more coordination there, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Going all the way back to Dark Knight's Metal last year, me, Scott Snyder, and Josh Williamson have been having long conversations about the directions we wanted to push the DC universe in, and we wanted to use the Justice League line as the vehicle to really launch forward each of these different realms, the cosmic realm in Odyssey, the magical horror realm in Dark, and then everything else in Justice League, and everything is careening towards a crisis level threat. And it's really, really exciting.
We've talked about this a lot on the show over the entire time we've been doing the show, but we've always felt like Justice League should be the premier title of DC. It should be the one that's leading the way versus this side title where everybody kind of gets together and does stuff. And it feels like for the first time in a really long time, that's what's happening. Is that something you guys sat down and talked about before you relaunched the books?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think one of the big things that I have to really commend DC for is they wanted this Justice League book to matter. They wanted all of the everything that we're doing in this book. You can't do big stories that have no ramifications for the rest of the universe, because it tells the people tells the reader right off the bat that these stories don't matter as much, and we wanted these stories to matter, and that was our real goal right from the start, was to really create the stories that you can't put down, and use Justice League to guide the line and sort of give it the spirit that we sort of felt a Justice League book should have. Like, we spend a lot of time talking about the Hall of Justice as a central location and how it really needed to be the living, beating heart of the DC universe. We wanted, sat in a room with a bunch of the other writers and creators at DC, and we're just like, we want everyone to use the Hall of Justice. We want to see this in books across the line. We want to reflect that this is the league of this moment. This is the status of the league. And if your hero needs to, go to a super science laboratory, they should come to the laboratory in the Hall of Justice. And we always want characters walking through the background. And, that's even why the Justice League Dark is operating out of the archives in the basement of the Hall of Justice. And so we want everything to kind of feel like it's part of that, like a kinetic connective universe.
Yeah, I feel like when I was a kid, that's the way I always imagined all the heroes just hanging out a lot more than we ever see. And maybe that's a big modern comics just don't do that as much. So it's great to see the idea of seeing Aquaman just wandering through the background of a Batman book. I love that so hard. So more cameos, I guess is what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Casually draw everyone in the background of everything.
No, I think people are really going to there's an issue coming up that, and I'm plugging it even though it's a Scott issue. It's not one of the issues I wrote on, but it all takes place in the Hall of Justice, and you get to see even the cafeteria of the Hall of Justice.
Oh, wow.
With the characters sitting down and having a
bite.
What
do they eat?
Oh boy, there is an answer to that question.
Really?
Oh,
gotta have an extensive menu.
Who's the cook?
Does
conversation
Aquaman
about
eat
who
fish
that
fingers. That's what I want to know.
And wouldn't he be upset if someone else was?
Right.
That's the thing.
This is a whole issue.
Yeah, I used to know that guy that you're eating.
Oh, yeah.
I've talked to him. I miss him.
Yeah.
And now you're eating him in stick form, which is an embarrassing way to be eaten.
I'd eat you in stick form.
Hey, buddy. Man, you always say that. It's a weird thing for you to say.
I want to just take it back for a moment. First off, it was super. I geeked out just seeing the Hall of Justice and Legion of Doom again in the comics. As someone who watched a ton of the cartoons as a kid, I totally geeked out. It's very amazing to have them back in the comics. But I did want to take my question back a little bit. Since you were on the show many years ago and now have blown up, first off, I want to say congrats on all your success. Thanks. It's really awesome to see you blow up in such a way. One of the questions we get asked a lot from fans and stuff is how people got their started or how they got started. But when did you know that, I wanted to be a writer? This is something that I would pursue.
Well, you're taking it way back.
I know.
That's deep.
I wasn't
people
expecting
hit me up
back
on Twitter and were please ask this.
Honestly, it goes back. I started knowing that I wanted to write in high school. Before then, I thought I wanted to draw, and then I took a bunch of drawing classes, and I did not have the patience for it.
not like writing, which is so fun all the time.
No, but writing is sort of
roller
everything.
Coaster.
It's not like art, where when art you put down a line, and if the line's wrong, you have to erase it and do it again. A Word document, something that you can keep editing and editing and editing, and at some point you just have to turn it in because the time's out. It's a more living document, and I can handle that a lot better.
And even once it's printed, you can run through comic book stores and cross things out.
I do that constantly.
That's a great way to get you
me too.
I knew I wanted to write in high school, and I actually went to college for writing. And I knew I wanted to write comics, but I didn't know how one went down that path. My favorite writer when I was in high school was Neil Gaiman, because that's when I finally read through all of Sandman. I just there was a few months where I was just picking up trade after trade and just knocking out the entire series.
Wow.
And it showed me that how big comics could be, how many different types of stories you could tell, that, and even especially like people forget that Sandman also, like, it, especially right at the beginning, it takes place in the DC universe. Like, Martian Manhunter shows up in an issue of Sandman. So it was seeing a different perspective on the universe I loved and telling stories that were deeply human that I really cared about in a whole bunch of genres, in horror and fantasy, and it's sort of in a single series. And it's just like that opened every door in my head. Mm-hmm. And I knew that comics was something that I desperately wanted to do. But it seemed like people just sort of fell sideways into comics at some point. My plan was I was going to learn how to write. And then at some point, maybe I would get my chance to fall into comics. So I went to college for writing. And my junior year, first semester, I went to Sarah Lawrence College, where they do a weird thing where you actually interview your teachers before you decide you want to take their classes.
Flip the script.
It's it's a great system. I sat down with one of the prospective writing professors for the upcoming year, and it was this young guy who had just had one book of short stories, but he started talking about this short story he had just written in a collection of superhero short stories called Who Could Save Us Now? And we started talking about comics and getting really excited about comics. And, you know, I had taken a lot of writing classes with a lot of teachers who I really love and respect to this day, but did not get my obsession with genre fiction and all of that. Like, I was the person in the, like, high literary classes writing sci-fi stories and stuff like that. But it was... this teacher really understood, and that was Scott Snyder. That was before he, over the course of that semester, that's when he first was pitching American Vampire. That's when he got the job to do a Human Torch one shot. I remember partway through that class, he sent me his initial pitch for American Vampire. And because I was like young and precocious, I sent back basically a 10-page breakdown of what was wrong with the pitch.
Baller move. So guys, that's a break-in story. Find someone who's going to be famous and correct shit on their work and correct it.
Yeah, exactly. And ever since then, he's sent me everything that he's written. And, you know, I was an intern at Vertigo out of college. I did that. But then... you know, I wanted to write, and I kept talking to Scott. We kept breaking story. I kept working on my own stuff. And then, you know, I was just hoping to like get my stuff in front of an editor. But then the moment came where they came to Scott saying, hey, we need backups in New 52 Batman because it's selling really, really well. And we want 8 extra pages of story. But Scott couldn't fit it into his schedule because he was writing 4 books at the time. Yeah. And he said, hey, James, do you want to co-write these backups with me? And I said yes.
Great choice.
Now I'm curious to take it back to the beginning of your story then. Have you met Neil Gaiman at this point?
No. I've met him in the way that like I've gotten my book signed by him like before I was a professional. Like mm-hmm. So it's like I've been in a physical proximity to Neil Gaiman, but I have not met him as a comics professional. Although I did actually, the day that I got my comps for the Batman Annual number 1, which wasn't my first comic, but it was the first comic that had my name on the cover, through the Tumblr Ask system, I sent Neil Gaiman a message just being like, hey, I know you're never going to get this. You're never going to, I'm not expecting a response, but you're the reason I wanted to write comics. And today I just got a comp box with my comic with my name on the cover, and I just want to thank you. And he just sent back like a very short like, I'm so glad, and like that was it.
The fact that he checks his Tumblr asks, this was amazing.
I don't think he does anymore. This was like before Twitter was like the main, like Tumblr was the better way to access creators in that moment.
That's very funny.
But no, it was I'm still very grateful for that.
Let's jump back to Justice League Dark. So, in my mind, magic is one of the most difficult areas to write about, period, I think. And particularly in a superhero universe, to impose rules on something that essentially is ruleless, that must be very difficult to jump into. Or do you look at it differently?
I do look at it differently, actually, because everything in superhero comics, and I say this with all the love in my heart, is ludicrous. And it is all arbitrary rule systems. So it's really about... and magic is about the limitless power of imagination, but it's also about giving that power a cost. And finding stories about, everything you can imagine, what you want the world to be and all of that, you can have that, but you're going to have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And all magic stories have an element of that. But the thing that I love about magic in DC is that the history of magic... the history of those characters, the history of magic in general, comes from the horror line. That's where it really breaks off from Marvel's magical characters in a big way, because Doctor Strange went straight cosmic from the beginning. But DC's characters, these were horror comics. These were the House of Mysteries, House of Secrets, that's where Swamp Thing comes from. That's where Eclipso comes from. That's where all of these figures, actually Eclipso, I think, comes from Strange Adventures, but that's that's besides the point.
Neighbor. That's our next door.
But it is something where it's the history of the horror line, and the fact that you sort of see these moments where, those horror books had a huge peak up in the 70s when Bernie Wrights and Len Wein and all of those guys were firing on all cylinders in the anthology books. And then in the 80s and into the early 90s, you had the Swamp Thing and the everything that built up to the creation of Vertigo. I really wanted to do something in that tradition that took the entire horror line of DC and tried to tackle it from a new angle,
and that's why you have
put everything in crisis.
The most horrifying character of all, Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah, no. But here's the real thing, though. In those early Swamp Thing stories, when Alec Holland, Swamp Thing, was face to face with a vampire for the first time, he was scared out of his mind because he had never seen a vampire before. We're dealing with a bunch of horror characters who have dealt with horror for years and years and years and years. They aren't scared of horror. Like your protagonist isn't scared of the threat.
Right.
So you need a protagonist who thinks that they aren't going to be shaken by what they're going to see. And then you need to shake them to their core. And then surround them with a bunch of sad monsters, because that's my favorite thing to do in a team book.
Well, so let's talk about the team then. How do you go about putting together a team like Justice League Dark? Is it looking at the main Justice League characters and saying, okay, you go to this title, you go to this title, or I imagine it's a little more complex than that.
Well, I knew I didn't want to just do a repeat of the previous iteration of Justice League Dark. The two characters I knew I wanted from the beginning were Zatanna and Wonder Woman. Zatanna represents the full history of DC magic, going all the way back to Giovanni Zatara and everything connected. One of the first magic characters that DC put out. So she represents the long lineage of magic and horror at DC. And then you have Swamp Thing, who represents particularly the Alan Moore era and the rise of Vertigo. And then you have Detective Chimp, who represents the Shadow Pact era and the most recent period, which is while I was in high school and getting into comics for the first time, around Infinite Crisis, or not for the first time, but that's when I finally had a car and money. So you have these characters who kind of can touch on these different arenas of magic. And then you have Man-Bat, because I wanted a mad scientist on the team. Yeah. And everyone's always why Man-Bat? He's not magic. And it's just mad scientists are so core to horror. And I wanted someone who's so deeply fascinated by all of this magic that can break all of it breaks all of reality with words and sigils and tools. And it's how does this work? And most scientists are just no, I don't want to think that this even exists. And Man-Bat wants to figure it out. And that's sort of the role that we'll be putting him on, is he's actually going to start trying to write a definitive guide to magic in the DC universe.
He also, we were talking about this on the show after the first issue came out, it feels like he fills the slot that Clayface filled in your Detective Comics run a little bit.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Honestly, Man-Bat was the other character I was considering when I was building my detective team.
Oh, man. And it would have great, that there was such a great run in that book. We talk about really it a lot on the show, and like it was such a, the character voice, the way you differentiated all the character voices, especially in the Bat family, where it's a little harder to do because they all sort of do similar things.
They're all different sized black-haired men.
Yeah, right. And you find a way to make those sizes different.
Yes.
Really identified the voice, and I feel like that is maybe something you're always striving for in your writing, or everyone is, but I feel like you're so good at it. And in this book as well, we talk about Man-Bat being that, like, oh, it's like the flavor you didn't know you needed until you tasted it.
I really appreciate that. Honestly, it's the character where, and this is what is the most similar to Clayface, is that Clayface and Man-Bat as characters have been written so many different ways. They don't have a coherent voice over the many decades that they've been in existence. Clayface in particular had like four different names and origins and all of that. Like, you know, and I tried to sort of weave all of those together. And with Man-Bat though, there is I am rooting it in the original story and the original incarnation. Like at some point we'll find out what's up with his wife Francine. And I want to play into the history there. But there is that, like, there is that core sadness of these characters who sort of fell into a life of villainy when that was never their intent. I don't know. I've had this conversation a lot with Josh Williamson about how, like, my favorite, like, when I try to build a team, there's like every character on the team is trying to live up to the ideal of the team. The team represents something and it's reaching towards something. And these sad monsters tend to be the characters who want to embody what the team is supposed to be more than anyone else, but they've failed in their lives before then, and they're worried they're going to fail again now. And that insecurity there is like one of the best like drivers for story. It's something that I think, you know, like it's the same as the core of like the Thing in Fantastic Four. It's like it's such a good element to have on a team as a character who doesn't know that they can live up to the ideals that they're supposed to, like you know, in a very human way. And it's always great to get at very human moments with characters who look like spooky monsters.
Mm-hmm. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have the villains. You teased that earlier, that you need somebody who is going to go up against the team. You introduced at least the initial villain. It seems like there's maybe a little more out there for the Justice League Dark to face with the Upside Down Man at the end of issue 2, which is super upsetting. For those of you who don't know...
It was an evil laugh, man.
Yeah, you can kind of tell from the name, but basically, as far as we've seen from issue 2, he hangs upside down. He seems to have an upside down smile, no eyes, is kind of white and patchy with almost like a Joker rictus smile throughout. It's very upsetting to look at. How do you design a villain like that? How do you approach somebody like that?
I mean, I had a lot of conversations with my artist, Alvaro Martinez, who is one of my favorite artists I've ever worked with. I started working with him in Detective Comics, and that really launched a creative partnership that, I hope I'm going to be working with Alvaro for a very, very long time. But I wanted to do a character that everything about him was wrong. This is a character who does walk upside down. He looks, it's just the character who walks in the room from the ceiling and is staring at you with this upside down smile. And there are little strings of spiders just dripping from his skin. Oh, and he's smiling there and he knows everything you're afraid of and he's going to eat you. Like he is pure horror.
I'm not scared yet, but like, keep going.
and honestly, I'm very excited because in that first round of discussions, he also designed the entire, like a whole batch of characters who are, from the same race of being, the other kind that the Upside Down Man is. And I just wrote, I'm in the process right now of writing an issue where we get to spotlight each of them, and they are really, really gross. And it's, I think, going to be the first time I'm going to go head to head with DC's like department of whether or not I can show certain things in a mainline superhero book that's not like teen plus or something. So I'm very excited to have that conversation.
Yeah, that's fun.
I love these characters, and basically I wanted to like the Upside Down Man is like I talked about before how Swamp Thing isn't afraid of vampires anymore. I wanted to do the thing that would still scare Swamp Thing. Wow. Like you introduce everyone to this magical world of horror, and now you introduce the nightmare that can scare the monsters. So it's like, what is the nightmare of the nightmares? Like, and that's the Upside Down Man. That's the other kind, and those are core villains to this series.
Now this is, so you have the third issue is coming out in about 2 weeks, and then is it immediately after that the crossover starts?
Yes.
Okay.
So the third issue, like the first three issues are basically the pilot of Justice League Dark, and is the first stage in a plan that runs through the at the very least through the end of next year, which I have all mapped out. But this is the Witching Hour plays, is designed to sort of answer the question of why is Wonder Woman on the team, and what is her connection to horror, and what is her relationship to magic. And like all horror, it's about finding things out about yourself that you didn't know that you didn't want to know.
Oh, no.
And we've seen at the start.
You seem terrified right now.
Yeah, I'm very scared.
Legit scared. Like moaning.
We saw at the start of Justice League Dark number 2 that there was a moment in her childhood where she had an encounter with the witch goddess Hecate. And that is the moment that is going to spur this event into action. It's still connected to the larger tapestry of what the Upside Down Man and the other kind are up to, and the Lords of Order and all of this stuff. Like I have a big mythology. Like it's, you know, if you like my Detective Comics run and how I tried to play the larger meta story, I have a big story that I'm trying to tell here that each part is each is a different part. But and the Witching Hour is designed that if you haven't been reading Justice League Dark, hopefully it'll give you a dose of, oh boy, I need to be reading Justice League Dark, and you will be able to follow it because it is primarily a Wonder Woman story, although the rest of the Dark team is present throughout. And you know, it brings in Circe, it brings in a bunch of elements of Wonder Woman's mythology that are more tied to magic, to horror, while you know, it also introduces a new take on Hecate as a very wrathful being who is not happy with how humanity has used magic and left the door open for beings like the other kind and the Upside Down Man to come and rain destruction. And so Hecate is going to take magic back and make it what she thinks it should be.
Wow. Not to keep tying this back to your Detective Comics run, but one of my favorite things there was the relationship between Clayface and Orphan. And is there a relationship like that that you think will pop out that will interest fans going forward in Justice League Dark?
That's a really great question. We're still a bit in early days, so it's one of those things where I see the potential in a few different pairings, and it's sort of as we're building. But honestly, my favorite relationship to write so far is the relationship between Wonder Woman and Detective Chimp. Like, they yeah. are... Like, Detective Chimp is like this angry, drunk monkey. And he is not, although a chimpanzee, although he'll call himself a drunk monkey every now and then, but yeah. he'll correct someone else if they call him that.
Yeah.
That's just the type of guy he is. He's someone who we're going to see his relationship with, you know, responsibility and living up to things, but he's like, it's the potential in him, to become something greater, and himself, the ways he always stands in his own way. And the thing that's most interesting in it is that I do see that Wonder Woman kind of like sees herself in him in the way that like Wonder Woman obviously is this like shining ideal, and to the rest of the world. But like Wonder Woman's own ideas are higher than what she lives at. And so her constantly reaching towards like what she wants and not being able to reach all the way there, even though to the rest of the world, she is kind of up on this pedestal, to her, she's not. And I think, you know, Detective Chimp could kind of give her the real talk sometimes. And like, you know, he doesn't care that, you know, it's one of those things where the other characters talk to Wonder Woman differently than Detective Chimp does. And I'm still sort of discovering that as I write it. But that's my answer for right now.
Cool.
Cool. Before we move on, we should talk about Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, which is done at this point, right?
Yes.
It's being collected.
Yeah.
What was the experience like bringing those characters together again?
Honestly, the working on both of the Batman Turtles books is a real dream come true. It's something that I can't imagine. Like, I still can't believe that it's an actual real thing that happened.
Yeah.
It seems like it was a fever dream that
it sounds like something that you woke up and the person was like, what'd you say?
Yeah. No. It's like, you know, now whenever I see Kevin Eastman, he gives me a hug, and that's like, pretty weird. But it's Kevin's also the nicest human being who has ever existed. But it is like getting to do another story with Batman and the Turtles was really important to me, and like getting to, and also just working with Freddie Williams, whose work on both runs of the series is just so phenomenal. It's tapping into the Turtles mythology, the only thing comparable is the it was my first forays into tapping into the Gotham City mythology. Just in that there are a bunch of different interpretations, there are a bunch of different takes, but there's something at the heart there that when you are writing, when you're writing them, you need to sort of reach towards this ideal of each version of the characters, and you're trying to express something real through them. On and in that process, you put your own take on it, but that take is like an approximation of what is the real voice of Splinter, what is the real voice of Raph and Mikey and all of these characters. And
you're thinking, give Michelangelo the grappling hook. That's what everybody wants. That's everyone's favorite thing that happened in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
It's like, but honestly, like Mikey is just an incredibly fun character to write. But it, like being able to play in that toy box and do a story that tells like, you know, an emotional story, like the first run, I think is sort of operated on the relationship between Batman and Raphael in a big way. And the second one is the relationship between Batman and Donatello. And like being able to kind of tap into how each of the Turtles relates to Batman and the Bat family and the entire concept of what he is, because he is like, once again, it's a sort of aspirational thing. Like Batman is the kind of ideal crime fighter that they want to, like these teenage ninjas want to grow up to the adult ninja that Batman is. And so that is it's really fun to tap into, and also bringing some bits of Gotham into the Turtles New York City in the second run was a lot of fun.
Now, I'm not totally familiar with this Batman character. He is he's a bat that fell into some ooze and became a human. Is that?
Yes, that's precisely
great.
The answer.
Seems like it would work perfectly then. All right, so pick those up and also pick up Justice League Dark, and we're going to move on to our next section very quickly, which is the stack. Very quickly, or should we just move on to audience questions? What do you guys think?
No, we can talk about these
all
books
right, very quickly.
You
right,
said quickly so many
quickly,
times.
Quickly.
You're
right.
Just taking more
wasting time.
Quickly, exactly.
Quickly, we'll waste a little bit of time. Talk about a couple of picks we had also as this week. Paper Girls number 24.
Yeah.
You want to talk about this one?
Yeah, it's great. This issue is cool because they've been kind of stuck in different parts of time. And this one, they kind of, spoiler, they find the map to get them back home. So it's very exciting. I've been waiting a long time for this issue, and I feel like it paid off really well.
This comic is wild. It's about these girls that deliver paper newspapers in the 80s, and it has spanned so much time. So much time travel and different takes on language and what how we react to seeing each other and ourselves, learning things about each other. It is such a good book, and it goes all the way, all the time. I feel.
And
like.
Cliff Chiang's art is gorgeous.
Yes. Yes, it is.
All right, definitely pick that up.
You did meet quickly.
Yes, I did. Let's move on to Cosmic Ghost Rider number 3 from Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
Pete, you were very excited about the last page of this book.
Oh, my God. Well, that's a fun thing of like, all right, let's take this kind of mashup and turn it up to 11 where we have like, all right, you have the Punisher, but then he becomes like the Silver Surfer with Galactus, but then you also give him the Ghost Rider powers.
I mean, honestly, this is like if you held a comic creator hostage and were like, I need you to make this comic, it would be this. And someone just made it on their own.
I know, it's unbelievable. And then the last page, it was like, okay.
Wait, see, the concept of the book is there was this character, Cosmic Ghost Rider, who is the Punisher, who turns out to be a Ghost Rider, who turns out to be a Silver Surfer. He's traveled back in time to kill Thanos as a baby, and then decides, you know what, instead I'm going to make Thanos good. So he's running around with a baby Thanos.
Raising.
Chained to his chest.
Yeah, again, sounds like a fever dream. He's fighting Cable in this issue, who he kills the entire Marvel Universe. And then at the end of the issue, Thanos is now the Punisher.
Right, because it turns out while all this was happening, Cable was going back in time to train to fight him again. And throughout all of this, Ghost Rider ends up raising Thanos. And the last page is so magical because it's just Thanos with a Punisher t-shirt on and a gun over his shoulder going, hey, Dad, sorry I'm late. I was like,
honestly, it's like you're ghostwriting this book. You're cosmic ghostwriting this comic
that's pretty
book.
Good. Yeah. It's a lot of fun and it's ridiculous. Moving on to our last one, Astonishing X-Men number 15. Ooh, Justin, you want to talk about this?
I like this book a lot. It's like a team of the X-Men fuck-ups. Everyone's like in a sort of a bad place. Havoc was evil for a long time, and now because he was turned evil in a recent Marvel Comics event, now he's back to normal, but he's brought in Colossus, who just got broken up with left at the altar.
Colossus is and he has a beard.
Bad shape.
Colossus has a beard, which is very weird to me.
And he doesn't wear a shirt very often.
Well, he turns into metal, but the beard is still there. So, like, is his beard made out of hair, or is it made out of
metal?
Well,
he always had metal hair.
Right, but then he has the beard, and it's, like, a little shaggy, so it's a little confusing
Alex,
for me.
Alex, you're what's wrong with comics. it doesn't matter. It's great. Dazzler's in this. Warpath. Like, it's just a great mix of characters. It feels like this is one of the X-Men books that really has some character in life.
All right, there we go. Ooh. That's it for the stack.
Wow.
Woo!
I thought you were going
to... All right, guys, we're going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because I get to come out to you guys. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
All right, audience questions, all you got to do, you know how this works. Oh, God, I'm knocking down cans and bottles and things. All you have to do is ask a question about absolutely anything, and you will get some free comics. So let's
and
go.
An answer.
Yeah, and an answer, maybe. Yeah. Here, I'm going to trade mics with you. All right, raise your hand. Raise your hand, ask a question. You, sir, right there, come on up.
Alex, this mic is so hot from your hand.
Is it?
So it's gross for me to touch it.
Sorry about that.
Just a little behind the scenes.
My name is Sean.
What's up, Sean?
And my question's for James. And I wanted to know that if you found writing in Los Angeles versus New York, which was better or easier for you?
Definitely New York, which is why I moved back here.
Nice.
Yeah, no.
Welcome back home.
Yeah.
New York City is great. And, you know, I have some feelings about L.A., but...
Let's get him out. This is a home audience. This is an L.A. takedown show.
It's a safe place, man.
No, I mean, like, I think it's the biggest difference, especially as a writer. I do all of my writing at home, and L.A., I think, can be a great place if you're working in a studio or you're working in an office and you're going in someplace every day. But in New York, it's very easy. If I need to get out, I can just walk out my front door and I'm in the mix. I'm in there's like a bar down the street. Another bar halfway down the street from there, like restaurants, bodegas.
I get what you're saying. That's why I like New York too.
Yeah. No, but it's just, it's people. It's seeing people, it's interacting with people.
That's what I meant, people.
Yeah.
And all those bars. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
I'll get another one.
Cool. Great question. You, sir, what is your name? What is your question?
Hi, my name is Keir.
And this question is for James. You mentioned earlier about, well, we were talking about how magic is somewhat of a fickle subgenre in the DC universe. Do you feel that there are some other like subgenres in the DC universe that you feel like that you can expand upon or develop or is underused? I mean,
oh, that's a great question. I mean, there are a lot of different amazing corners of DC universe mythology that, like, you know, for so long, it's the benefit of the fact that, unlike, Marvel was still existed before it turned big superheroes, but DC had a lot more characters active sort of before the Silver Age, and so it has a great history of war comics, it has a great history of crime comics separate from superhero crime, it has a great, and all of these characters still I think have tremendous value. I particularly love the Western characters, and that Jonah Hex series Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray did was a phenomenal series,
yes.
And those are characters that I think they'll have their day in the sun again. but I will say that out of the arenas of DC that I would love to put my stamp on, even though right now Josh is doing an amazing job in Odyssey and there's a bunch of amazing cosmic stuff, DC Cosmic is one of my favorite corners of DC, and at some point I'll have my fun over there.
Wow, there you go.
Watch awesome. Out, Josh Williamson.
Yeah, that's a target on his back.
Yeah, shots cool. Fired.
We can take another question. You, sir, right there, come on down. What is your name and what is your question?
I'm the Gladiator.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Pablo.
I don't know what you mean by that, but...
Thanks for calling me out. James, like to ask you a question. So, what if you wanted to tackle another genre when in the DC universe? What kind of genre would you like to handle other than...
I mean, it's the science fiction in general, I think, the outside of the superhero realm is, I think, deeply interesting. And I really, at some point, my favorite corner, and it drives me crazy that Tom King is doing such an amazing job on Mr. Miracle right now. The New Genesis Apocalypse, all of the New Gods characters are some of my favorite characters and some of my favorite mythology at DC. But now, in order to do that, I have to either find a totally different way to do it or, have to come up with something that good. Yeah. But I'm also, I will say, I am not done with DC horror. I've been talking to, in conversations, and I do not remotely have the time, but I'm already, whenever I see Dan DiDio, I'm talking to him about different DC horror characters that I want to play with. So
awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Well, terrifying. Not that anybody wants to hear from us, but what about you guys? What do you think? Is there any area of the DC universe that is underused that you would like to see more of?
Underused area. The highway system, we don't get a lot of takes on that. Infrastructure, obviously.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Clearly.
Yeah,
where's our tax money going?
Yeah,
you guys are joking, but I was going to say Gorilla City is the weirdest thing to me.
That's true.
Absolutely.
That there's an entire city of gorillas there and people barely ever talk about it except when the Flash is like, I'm angry at Gorilla God, goodbye forever. What's that like on a daily basis?
Gorilla City?
Yeah, what goes on there? It's a whole city.
They're just trying to live their lives. It's like New York City,
but
gorillas.
I'd love to see that.
Well, the thing is, I mean, not to keep talking about cities, but the DC Universe has all these extra cities that we don't have in the real world. How do they all? I mean, I feel like it's sort of like gestured at lightly that Gotham City and Metropolis are near New York, sort of.
Oh, my! I have, I actually just bought this a few months ago. There's a games guide. I forget what the game, it was a tabletop game based on the DC universe in the 90s, and they put together a guidebook that actually had maps of each of the cities and also a map of the United States with where all of the fictional cities are.
Yeah. Wow.
And basically, Gotham City is sort of in southern New Jersey, and Metropolis is in Delaware. Like, and so basically,
of course, it's like, where all those corporations
in DC, the coast goes down. It's New York, Gotham, Metropolis, DC.
Wow.
No wonder there's so many disposable people.
City.
Oh,
in the center.
Where did they put Central City? I think it is. It's the Twin Cities. It's basically like.
All right, cool.
But yes, I think that is where they put it too. But yeah,
one of my favorite comic book details ever is in JLA Avengers, and I think it's when the Avengers are over on the JLA's Earth. They're at the Watchtower and they're looking down at the Earth, and somebody's like, "Huh, your East Coast is larger than ours."
Oh yeah, no, I love that.
Great little internal joke. So I want a globe-trotting, a city-trotting series, sort of like who's the superhero Anthony Bourdain traveling around to going to different cities around the United States.
He just got sad.
Well, yeah, I just started about
it's okay.
Bourdain.
It's not a, I wasn't really dwelling on
that. We understand what you're saying. Yeah. Do you have a underused portion, Pete?
I would also like to use my time to talk about the amazing job that is going on with the New God stuff. I mean, I never thought like I would be so emotionally invested in a book that is, you know, it's just kind of like regular panels all the time, and they do such an amazing creative job. It just, I'm so blown.
So you're going to compete with James to take over for
I'm not competing. I'm just using my time to say it's amazing, and I'm so glad it exists.
Thank you.
No, as a writer at DC alongside that book, it is constantly infuriating how much I love it.
All right, very cool. Unless anybody has anything else, that is it for your audience questions.
Yeah.
All right, guys, it is time for our next section, which is trivia. For that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part where we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you for showing up. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics, because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. Who would like $25 free? A simple raising of the hand. Yes, you, sir. Come on down.
All right, Pablo, you've
won before. We're going to give it to this gentleman here.
Never.
All right, sir. You're going to get a microphone. What is your name?
Sean.
Audience Sean.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Today's trivia is on James. As long as you know everything about James, you'll win $25. It'll be fine. No, I'm going to read you a question. Listen to all three possible answers. Get all three questions right. $25 is yours. All right. In the comic The Woods, the story begins in the same place James is from, which is it A, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, B, Tampa, Florida, or is it C, Eternia? So it's either A... or it's B.
A.
A is correct.
Nice
Milwaukee.
Job.
Here we go. Question number two. In 2013, James won the Gasly Award for Best Web Comic. What was that comic? Is it A, Eight Killers, B, The Eighth Seal, or is it C, The Fright Zone? So it's either A, don't pick A, or it's B.
B
is correct.
No,
the
great.
Eighth Seal. That is correct. All right, here we go. Last one. Don't get cocky. But before he was a famous comic book writer, James worked. Is it A, in advertising, B, on a farm, or is it C, for the evil forces of Hordak? So it's either A,
you could do,
like
you could do both of those jobs. You could do that's multiple jobs.
Well, yes, but...
You could work in farming for the evil forces of Hordak.
I guess, technically...
You could farm for Hordak.
But please try not to... I'm just trying to give this guy $25.
Okay, do whatever you want. You're the star of trivia.
$25, sir, is yours. You won $25 free. Congratulations.
Wow, unbelievable. I like that move where you dropped it on the floor and put your foot on it.
Yeah, I tried to.
You tried to steal from this man. Yeah. You were so trying to get the $25 gift card.
And just to answer the question, it was the evil forces of Hordak.
I knew it. See, that's what I'm saying.
Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, man, this is easy. Headlopper number 9 is coming out. I cannot wait.
Oh, man. Are they taking heads off?
I bet you there's going to be more headlopping.
Okay. Good. Well, what do you like about? Is there something you like about him besides?
Yeah, what's great is, you know, they don't overthink the name. You know, they really just stick to what they're good at.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of heads lopped in that book.
I will say, you are selling this short because the art in this book is fantastic.
There's a lot of amazing things about this book.
Yeah, but you've only been talking about the head lopping.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
It's like you just read the title and you were like, I like that.
No, I've been reading the whole series and it's a ton of fun.
Is there one guy just lopping heads? Because otherwise it should be head loppers.
Yeah, it's one main guy, yeah.
One main guy? Cool.
Yeah, and he's got a witch head that he travels with that talks to him.
A pre-lopped head.
Yep.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to Archie 1941 number one by Mark Waid and Brian Augustine. It's Archie set back then, and I'm interested to see how they're going to do a fun Archie with World War II, which was a sort of bad thing.
Thanks, I didn't know how to feel about it.
Yeah, that was like the worst falling in a bucket. The world tripped and fell in a bucket, Archie style.
Keep going.
Yeah, no, I'm just explaining. It's history.
Please. It was
just
like an ice cream.
You guys have
freeze.
Another hour, real quick. He's going to explain World War II.
Yeah, yeah. So start with through the lens of Archie and friends. Jughead was sort of Russia in the whole thing. No? Okay, great. No, okay.
Just to mention, we do a regular comic book review podcast that goes up Wednesdays at 9 a.m. in the Comic Book Club live feed called The Stack. We'll have a review of Archie 1941 and a ridiculous number of other titles tomorrow.
Yeah.
So definitely check that out. I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman number 54 is coming out. Steve Orlando is writing it. It's kind of a fill-in arc between James Robinson and the next team that's coming out in a little bit, but it's really good. As usual, Steve Orlando has taken some weird DC continuity stuff, mixing it in with Wonder Woman, but they've been very tightly written, very direct issues, and I'm enjoying it a lot. So definitely pick that up. Plug your stuff again, James. What should people check out?
All right. I think next week, not this week, but next week, I have Justice League number 8 coming out, which is the next Legion of Doom issue of the Justice League run, and it will be featuring the Batman Who Laughs, and we will this issue sort of helps form the bridge between Justice League and the upcoming Batman Who Laughs series by Scott Snyder and Jock. So definitely pick that up. 2 weeks from now, I have Justice League Dark number 3, which is the third and final issue of The Last Days of Magic, and will pit the team head to head with the Upside Down Man in a big, big way. And the week after that, and every week following in October, is The Witching Hour, a crossover between Wonder Woman and Justice League Dark. And it's 5 parts. It comes out every week in October. You don't want to miss it. And at the end of October, I have a Zatanna story I did with Mark Buckingham in the Cursed Comics Cavalcade, which I love that title. I love saying it. And working with Mark Buckingham is just a dream come true. Like, you know, from Miracle Man to Fables, like he's been one of my favorite artists. Great. My entire life, so working with him is like it still doesn't seem real. Also that day is the first issue of Justice League Aquaman Drowned Earth number 1, which is the big event that's gonna span all of November. So the Halloween day, I have like more pages of comics coming out than. Oh, and also that month is the Backstagers Halloween special. Tied in. So seriously, I have a lot of comic books coming out in October, and you should buy all of them.
Okay.
Oh, there you go. All right, very cool. A couple of things before we go. If you'd like to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. It is free to come see and free to listen to, but it does cost us a little bit of money to do. And if you do pledge, we give you a bunch of stuff back. We have a private Patreon Slack, which has been a lot of fun to hang out in.
So many, so many things to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Randomly in the morning often.
Yeah, Pete privately will Slack you.
That's right.
Long.
And while that sounds like a curse, people seem to like it.
Yeah.
What are you saying to them?
It's not as creepy as you guys make it out to be.
Well, I would like to see the transcripts.
Yeah, show us your private Slack speed.
No way, man.
Jesus.
All right.
Also, we have a Patreon-only podcast and a bunch of other prizes like that you can check out. Also, we do a bunch of other podcasts you can check out all at comicbookclublive.com. Some of them are coming back soon, a couple of months from now. Our Riverdale podcast will be coming back, Riverdale After Dark, among other things, so definitely check that out. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank James for being on the
show. Yeah!
We want to thank Ronnie Rotten. But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Good night, guys. Thank you.
Sit on crappy couches and they let me